kickoff 2022 is a go. Coverage presented by 72 Souls and Kona Brewing.
You can see in the NFL the trend of guys that most teams know are going to start on getting a lot of work in the preseason anyways, and so it's been good for the young guys to be able to show what they can do and get the majority of the reps.
The home of Arizona Cardinals football, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Camp Takeoff 2022 with Bickley and Marotta.
Not a ton. I think guys, ultimately, I know the players enjoyed having that basically preseason bye week at the end, so I think it worked out for all parties, but you can see in the NFL the trend of guys that most teams know are going to start on getting a lot of work in the preseason anyways, and so it's been good for the young guys to be able to show what they can do and get the majority of the reps.
Cliff Kingsbury earlier this week on how to manage a three-game preseason, which, if memory serves, and I should have looked this up, this will be the first three-game preseason in totality for the Cardinals. Remember last year they had a game canceled? The New Orleans game was called off for COVID reasons.
Oh, yeah.
So they only had two preseason games last year. The year before,
they had none.
No preseason.
Oh, I love that.
And the
that
year
preseason.
Before that, there was four preseasons.
So this is the first ever three.
Yeah.
Okay.
When can we get to two?
Yeah. Hopefully by next year.
Do I hear a two? Anybody a two? We talked a lot about the offense and seeing Trace McSorley and wonder if there's an opportunity for him to shine. I don't know what his future looks like in the league. He's clearly, at best, the third-string quarterback right now for the Arizona Cardinals this year. Do they even keep three quarterbacks? Probably, but we shall see. The cornerback position gets a lot of discussion, and I think there's a reason for that, because it's the biggest question mark on this team right now. We won't see a lot of Byron Murphy Jr. We will see Marco Wilson. And I think, if you wanted to list the guys that can make, that have the most potential to make a good impression in this preseason opener, Vic, Marco Wilson is at or near the top of the list. There's no doubt.
Yeah, Marco Wilson, Zaven Collins, I think the guys on offense we're talking about, I think we're looking at them in the perspective of, are you putting something together? And that's Greg Dortch, that's Andy Isabella, that's Eno Benjamin. And again, I've got this weird fascination. I'm really looking forward to watching Trace McSorley play the position, just because of who he was in college and the fact that he, there's kind of some juice in his legs. I'm just real curious to see how he comes out spinning the ball. There have been really good reviews about him. So I'm excited to see that in the context of supplemental pieces on offense down the road. The defensive issues are more immediate. They're more nefarious, if you will. They're guys, if you don't notice Zaven Collins tonight, that's an issue. If Marco Wilson has two PIs in the first two possessions, that's an issue.
If he plays like the second possession with oven mitts on?
If tennis balls are taped to his hands, that's an issue. So I think, but again, that's kind of the way that I handicap this football team. They have what could be, if everything breaks right offensively, they could have certainly a playoff caliber offense, no doubt about that, especially with Kyler Murray and what he brings and how much he might be growing before our eyes. Because keep in mind now, twice he has spent a ton of time signing autographs after practice. And that to me is a commitment. That to me is a change in him. And I don't know if someone's in his ear saying, hey, you know what, now that you got that money. But I don't think that's the way Kyler rolls. I think Kyler is just probably growing up, and I'm really excited about that. My gut feeling is we are never going to wonder about that money that was paid to Kyler Murray, but that's a story for another day.
I hope you're right.
So offensively, I think that they've got the pieces to be a playoff team and even make a run at this thing. Just defensively, they just look so thin and so vulnerable. I just, the combination of the lack of a true edge rusher plus a really thin group of cornerbacks, that's a terrible combination.
Yeah. Cliff Kingsbury did talk about another corner he's keeping an eye on this Friday, tonight's game against the Bengals, and that's seventh-round pick Christian Matthews.
Christian Matthews is the guy I want to see play live. He's gotten better each day. Played at a small school, but has come in and really been diligent in attacking our scheme and the work ethic. Anything we ask him to do, if he screws something up, he gets it right right the next time. And so we'll see how he responds when the lights are on.
We talked to Christian Mathieu after the draft about his journey to the NFL and how long it took him to get there. He's a 25-year-old rookie. You don't see a lot of those in the NFL. You know, do you want to rely on a seventh round pick to be part of your corner rotation? No, but that's kind of the position that the Cardinals find themselves in potentially again if they don't go out and make a trade or acquire somebody in that group. If you want to follow along with Cliff Kingsbury on Christian Mathieu, he wears number 35, Aeneas Williams' old number. So that's a good place to start.
Interesting.
Trace McSorley, you said you're curious to see him play.
I really am.
Here he is on tonight's game.
Anytime you get out, get a chance to go on the field and show what you can do and perform and play the game is a huge opportunity. So I'm definitely excited about that. Excited for a lot of guys on this team. Be able to go out. We've had a great camp so far. Just be able to go out and now put it on the field against another team and show what we can do, show what we've been working on.
Yeah, he was one of those guys, especially late in his career, his last year at Penn State. He was one of the better players, more recognizable, bigger names in college football, and it's been a bit of a grind for him at the pro ranks, but a guy who certainly has talent. To get to see him at least for a half, you would expect those guys to each get a half, wouldn't you? Garantano to get the second half?
Yeah, I definitely. And I think that with a guy like Trace McSorley, if you're a guy who has not had an opportunity, and a guy that the Cardinals sought out because he was exposed on the practice squad in Baltimore, right? That to me is, what are you looking at me like that for? That's a really odd look, Jared. Why are you looking at me like that? That's creepy, man.
Okay. I was waiting for you
to stop talking?
Finish your thoughts.
Okay. So that hologram?
Okay. So that I could play the Trace McSorley.
Oh, you've got the Trace McSorley. Okay. Sorry about that. You just threw me off my game a little bit.
I'm so glad I can't really see Jared from where I'm sitting.
Hey, it's a blessing for you, let me tell you. So he's in the Ravens system where they require their quarterbacks to be dual threats. And the Cardinals saw him and said, yep, we'll take that.
At the expense of the leveler, Chris Strebler, by the way.
This is a much more intelligent risk than bringing in a guy from the Canadian Football League. So, without further ado, Trace McSorley, the quarterback once so inspirational that a musician did this?
Throw it on a dime, like I ain't even trying. Just a kid from Briarwoods, I'm wearing number 9. And Coach Franklin down at Vandy, flipped to Happy Valley. Now I'm coming back and got the natty on my mind. They can't touch my deep ball, every game I'm scoring. I'm your favorite quarterback, they call me Trace McSorley. Rep that blue and white, you know I do it for the glory. Baker won the high. Next up, Trace McSorley.
No, that's the Kyler Murray.
We need that's an edit. Funny. That's good.
Yeah.
No, Kyler Murray. Yeah. So, I mean, this kid, do you remember him playing at Penn State? He had a lot of attitude. He had a lot of Jim McMahon energy to him.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm curious to see if he just comes out flinging, you know?
And what do you got to lose, right?
What do you got to lose?
Yep. Do you know a high school student with great character? We want to hear about them and how they make an impact on their community. Just text the word character to 620-620. Share their story. What's in it for them? Potentially a $10,000 scholarship from Parker & Sons and Arizona Sports. Just text character to 620-620. Coming up next, we had preseason openers last night, and they're working things out in New England, apparently. We'll get into that and more NFL hash marks next. It's Bickley & Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
Do you know if one will call plays when the regular season arrives?
Yeah, well, don't worry about that. We'll work it out.
So have you decided?
We're going through a process, just like everything else on this team.
It's only a snippet of the exchange. Bill Belichick, after the New England Patriots last night lost their preseason opener in Foxborough to the Giants 23-21, he made headlines a few weeks ago, Bick, when he said, "Yeah, we're not gonna have coordinators.
Yeah, we'll
have jobs, not titles." So last night, Matt Patricia and Joe Judge are taking turns calling the offensive.
Okay,
play calls.
I can back up, we're talking about Matt Patricia, defensive mastermind,
yes,
and Joe Judge,
special teams guy.
Okay. All right. All right. And he's dismissing the question as in how dare you?
I wish we had the whole exchange, but we don't. It starts out with the question. We saw both Matt Patricia and Joe Judge taking turns on play calling duty tonight on the offense. Is that the plan moving forward, having them switch back and forth? And do you plan on naming a single guy or going with both? Belichick answers, yeah, well, we did this game. We did a lot of things in this game that are going to be beneficial in the long run, whether it was on the coaching staff, playing time, players that played, and so forth. That's all part of the process. Question, Bill, what are some of the benefits of having Joe and Matt call plays tonight? Bill, I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to do that. Question, do you know if one will call plays when the regular season arrives? Yeah, don't worry about that. We'll work it out. This is the part you heard. Have you decided? We're going through a process just like everything else on this team. Another question. You mentioned earlier with the offensive play caller, you're going through a process. What do you need to see? Bill, I don't need to see anything. Just we're going through a process. Simple as that. Question. It's just a little bit of an unusual situation for us that have watched you guys before. Bill, what do you want me to do? Question. I guess we're just looking for a little clarity as to why we're seeing what we're seeing. Bill, great. Yeah, going through a process.
Wow.
What do you think is the actual reason that they're doing this after all these years?
I don't know.
Josh McDaniels isn't there anymore.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Simple that they weren't expecting him to leave. And
there's that. There's the maybe the belief from Bill Belichick that a football coach can coach football, all of it, because he can. That's really unconventional, and you are asking yourself, if this offense sputters, you are asking for annihilation from public perception.
Do you think, and again, we don't have the whole exchange to hear the tone, but it was described as testy by a lot of different people who were in attendance for that press availability. To me, that could just be Bill Belichick getting frustrated with the constant questioning of it. I mean, that's four or five questions on the same subject there, what he just said, we're going through a process. Now, in some sports cities like Boston, they don't take the first answer and move on. They ask follow-up after follow-up after follow-up.
Right.
I think that might have been part of the frustration.
No, but again, this is, to me, there's a disconnect there. That's when it becomes performative, in my opinion, because if pressed on something he doesn't want to talk about, Bill Belichick has never cracked and never got, okay, all right, fine. I'll relent. What do you want? Okay, I'll tell you. He's never, ever done that. Mm-hmm. In fact, in those situations, when he is pressed to elaborate on something, he shuts it down even more. But man, if you're covering the football team, you've got to ask these questions.
Yeah.
These are fundamentally important to a fan's perception of the team.
Yeah.
If you're a football fan in New England and you've grown up your entire life believing that offensive coordinators are important, and you probably do because you had one of the best ones in Josh McDaniels, then these are perfectly legitimate concerns. Who's calling plays? Calling plays in football, as we have seen here, it's a big deal. It's if you're overly anxious, if you can't play the game, if you can't see what's happening, if you can't set plays up with two plays previous, you're gonna get overmatched badly.
But does it, I mean, and I know they're in transition now because McDaniels isn't there, but does it matter that much? We've seen examples in the past, and it's not an apples to apples comparison. I get it, but Bruce Arians, when he was the head coach of the Cardinals, that, you know, last preseason game, he washed his hands of the whole situation and said, here, you guys do it. It'll give you some experience. I don't have any doubt in my mind they'll have some sort of system locked down by the time week one rolls around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how effective it's going to be. I don't know if I'm a Patriots fan, I don't know if I have that much faith in either one of those guys who are both now former head coaches in the league, because their backgrounds don't really scream offensive play caller.
No, and it's really counterintuitive to what the game has become. And that has become an offense/pass-first kind of game. Keep in mind, though, last year, Bill Belichick's greatest triumph was that game in which he refused to pass the football and still beat the Bills in those frigid conditions, mm-hmm. and windy conditions. And that was one of those, I'll never forget, after the game where Sean McDermott, the Bills head coach, just said, do not give him too much credit for this.
He just
and everybody was. We're like, nope, we are. And this feels like more of that. But listen, I've heard some people kind of lash out at the media. They're like, why do you keep asking them? You know you're not going to say anything. Come on, man. That's the real hard element of that job, to continue to ask those questions because they are the answers are important to people. All right.
Yeah, harder even in a situation like Boston dealing with a coach. Like,
and dealing with that guy.
That's hard anywhere. But yeah.
Right. It's dealing with the guy who has contempt for people in his presence. Those are never easy scenes to navigate.
Yeah. Bill Belichick's old quarterback, Tom Brady, now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not with the team right now.
Tom has been excused today. He'll be taken anywhere. He'll be back sometime around after Tennessee. He's going to deal with some personal things. This is something we talked about before training camp started.
And is it that big of a deal, Todd Bowles?
I don't think it stops it at all. We have a system in place. We have guys we want to see. Like I said, it gives us a chance to see the backup quarterbacks. It gives us a chance to see the receivers trying to make the team. So it kind of helps us that way and see them under the lights and in practice. So I don't think it hurts us at all.
It's probably very minor, but when it gets termed personal reasons and it's a player, the status of Tom Brady at this point in his career, it just gets all the speculation. Speculation wheel spinning very fast.
Well, the non-football reasons is something that's interesting, but more to the point, it's the guy. Tom Brady is so process driven.
How process driven is he?
He loves it. He doesn't skip a moment of it. So there's something heavy to this, and I don't know. I don't want to speculate.
No.
Todd Bowles said they talked about it before the start of training camp,
and there's an end date. So it's not like something that like he'll be back when it's all settled.
I wonder if Vinny's right. I wonder if they book some sort of vacation.
They can't admit that publicly. So hey, let's just go with personal reasons. If we see Instagram videos of Tom Brady jumping off cliffs with his kids, we know something's up.
Well, listen, I've again, you don't want to speculate. I heard one guy this morning doing just that, just saying, "What if his family is like, come on, man, when's enough enough?" And there were people speculating that that's why he wanted to go to Miami, because that was a destination in which his family would feel comfortable living there versus Tampa.
You know, they do say that Tampa is the Miami of Northern Florida.
If you could have seen Bickley's face when he said the word Tampa.
Not since he was talking about
Iowa.
And
that's not even in the Midwest.
Tampa is just so cheesy and gross.
Would you say that Tampa's in Midwest Florida?
Yeah, I would. That's
good. Emphasis on mid.
Right. Right. So I don't know, but it's just odd for a guy that loves every detail and every practice and really believes that a team needs it. That's something.
He was going over to his offensive coordinator's house illegally during the pandemic to study playbooks. That's how much he's
in. He was walking into wrong houses.
The wrong house in the process.
Right. Yeah, you remember that?
Getting kicked out of a park.
I just got out of the shower and Tom Brady was strolling through my kitchen.
Maybe Tom Brady saw our Mock My World thing and said, you know what? I got to give this Bickley guy a break. I am just too much in his face.
Thanks,
coming
Tom.
Up, right, coming up
thanks,
next,
Tom.
The big stories of the day, the Rush Hour reboot with Sarah Cazell is next. Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot, everyone, here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We talk to you about the top stories of the day every single day at this time at 7:30. I am Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey.
Vince Murata.
Nanu.
And Jarrett Carlin.
Be thankful I don't put a bag over your head and choke you out in front of your family.
I can only imagine Luke Lipinski's face.
That was before.
In that moment. Oh, was there another show? Oh. We're talking the top stories of the day, and that's the Arizona Cardinals. They play their first preseason game tonight against the Bengals in Cincinnati. As I mentioned in the update, a 4:30 start on this here station. Pre-game coverage, though, starts at 12:30, so you're going to be covered all day long with the Arizona Cardinals. Trace McSorley will start at quarterback tonight, the third stringer. getting the call up. He'll be backed up by Jarrett Garantano. Cliff Kingsbury said a few days ago that he has admired McSorley for a few years now.
I admired him from afar, just watching him at Penn State. I thought he was tough-nosed. He was a gamer. It seemed like every game that they played, they were in it. And he kind of had that will to win and that moxie. And not the biggest guy, not the strongest guy, but just made plays. And then I remember him in Baltimore in the preseason, played really well for them. And so I've been pleasantly surprised at I guess his ability as a passer and his knowledge of the system and how quickly he's picked it up.
And then McSorley himself said earlier this week that he is ready for this opportunity.
Anytime you get a chance to go on the field and show what you can do and perform and play the game is a huge opportunity. So I'm definitely excited about that. I'm excited for a lot of guys on this team. Be able to go out. We've had a great camp so far. Just be able to go out and now put it on the field against another team and show what we can do, show what we've been working on.
All right, for the degenerates out there, FanDuel Sportsbook has the Cardinals as 2-point underdogs.
Oh, the disrespect.
I know. No Joe Burrow. They think they're going to lose. Wins, obviously, are not really the point here in the preseason.
Right.
So are you guys more intrigued to watch the Cardinals' offense and how it runs or the Cardinals' defense?
Yeah, I'm actually, to me, again, I'm more interested in seeing this quarterback. I'm just curious if he's going to come out and just rock along with it and just kind of...
Just be swaggy?
Yeah, right. That's what I was looking to
swaggy
say.
Swaggy tea?
Yeah. Like I ain't even right. Just a once I'm wearing number nine. Trace McSorley.
I hate to be the turd in the punch bowl, but I'm voting for defense.
Okay.
There's more guys that could contribute in the regular season playing early on defense, so be looking out for them. And I can't... Trace Sarah, did you see the movie Can't Hardly Wait?
No, I don't think so.
Every time I hear Trace McSorley, I want to call him Trip McNeely.
That's tremendous. Wait, I'm looking for the movie cover right now.
It was Jennifer Love Hewitt and Seth Green. Yeah.
No.
It's great.
Should I watch it?
Great movie.
It is?
Great.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll check that out this weekend. All right. Let's go to the NBA now. Yesterday, during the Rush Hour reboot, at this time, we were all pretty much resigned to the fact that the Suns were out of the chase for Kevin Durant, because two separate reports this week have named many Eastern Conference teams in the mix for Kevin Durant, but the Phoenix Suns were not mentioned in either of those reports. And then, on Burns and Gambo yesterday, our John Gambadoro said this.
Listen, I'm hearing, and take it for what it's worth, okay? I'm hearing that Kevin Durant is expected to be in the Valley tonight. Now, again, I have no... It could be from 100 reasons. He obviously can't meet with the Suns. He's on the contract with another team. So I will say this. I have heard that he's expected to be in the Valley tonight, arriving, you know, later tonight. But I have no reason as to why he's here. And I have heard nothing about, like, him and the Suns, because obviously he can't meet with the Suns.
Remind me to talk to Mitch about where to pull the audio for the podcast. Neither here nor there.
Oh, okay.
Sound a little overmodulated.
I'll remind you.
That's coming from the air feed, right?
Yeah.
Oh, rookie mistake.
Inside baseball.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, so what do you guys think Kevin Durant is doing in Phoenix?
I have no idea.
It's not Suns related.
No?
It can't be. I mean, Gambo hit it. Like, you can come here, and if you want to hang with Devin Booker, you want to get some shots up with Devin Booker, yeah, work out, you can do all those things. Devin Booker does not have the authority to make a trade, and you can't meet with the guys that do have the authority to make the trade, or else you're getting hit with a tampering charge.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but it's not Suns related.
Well, or I suppose you could also look, if you like the odd conspiracy every now and again, you could also say, all right, you know, there's been reporting that he would accept a trade to Philly, that he would accept a trade to Boston. We've not heard Kevin Durant say any of those things. We're assuming they're true. We don't know if they're true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe Kevin Durant came to Phoenix and wanted it to get out that he came to Phoenix as sort of a way that, hey, this is where I want to be. I don't know. But I do agree with what Vinny said. The Suns could never, ever, ever be meeting with him when it's against the rules,
yeah,
because people are going to be watching for that.
Yeah. Players can still hang out with him, just
yeah,
not
right,
the organization.
He right, got drafted in our Mock My World yesterday, so maybe he's coming to settle a score with the Bickley and Murata Morning Show. How dare you guys be sick of me?
Can you imagine the swing? Those arms are 7 feet long. My goodness. All right, let's stay with the NBA. we learned yesterday that a little over a week after the death of Bill Russell, the NBA legend, and we're not throwing that around lightly, legend, the NBA announced yesterday that they are going to retire his number six league-wide. So Bill Russell joins Jackie Robinson and Wayne Gretzky as the only players in American professional sports to have their numbers retired across the league. On ESPN yesterday, Matt Barnes and Tim Bontemps shared their thoughts on that decision.
Great decision. Again, his historical significance on and off the court will never be forgotten. So it's great. Again, similar to what the, Major League Baseball has done for Jackie Robinson.
42.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see you know, how creative we can be moving forward to continue to honor his legacy.
And as Bobby said earlier, it'd be cool if there's a Bill Russell Day, whether it's Martin Luther King Day or another day on the calendar where everybody wears number six and honors Bill Russell. But to your point, Matt, like, there's nobody more deserving of this honor than Bill Russell in the history of the NBA. So I'm glad they're doing it.
So you might be wondering, listeners out there, what happens to the NBA players currently wearing number six, like our favorite LeBron James?
Oh, yeah.
Those players will be allowed to continue wearing number six through the end of their careers if that's what they want to do.
But should they?
That's a good question. I'm sure we will see players swap jersey numbers now heading into this.
I would think if this is if the idea is to honor Bill Russell to the extent that you're retiring his number from circulation, that the guys who are currently wearing it should find a different number.
Remember, yeah. Mariano Rivera though wore 42 all the way until his retirement.
I get it. I get it. But this is interesting to me because of all people for this to affect, it affects LeBron James.
Yeah, but I mean, he switched numbers before.
Yeah. That's
right.
That's true.
I'm a big Tim Bontemps guy. But did he suggest in that soundbite that Bill Russell Day all players would wear number six? How the hell would you call fouls?
Fouls on number six. Spoken like a true PA guy.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Logistically, it doesn't work.
Yeah, you did.
Dude, baseball numbers mean absolutely nothing. They're decorations. Everybody can wear 42. It doesn't affect the game.
That's
it would
true.
Affect
you're
the game
right.
of basketball.
Very, yeah,
right.
You'd have to announce them by name.
They had the same complaint with the ASU jerseys yesterday.
Oh, well,
how did they see
so
the numbers?
True,
to make
yeah.
the call?
It's so true, though. It's terrible.
I'm looking out for other people, Jarrett.
Sure you are.
This
right.
is not about
sure
me.
You are.
You're a generous man. Okay, so what I wanted to ask, though, with Bill Russell, Jackie Robinson in Major League Baseball, and Wayne Gretzky in the NHL all having their numbers retired league-wide, that leaves the NFL as the last North American pro sports league to not have a league-wide number retired. Is there anyone in the history of the NFL that deserves that?
I would say the number 40 for Pat Tillman, but...
Does that
I'm biased.
I mean, yeah, we're biased here, yeah. And it's certainly local in nature. Does that, sure. I mean, it did resonate after his death with the whole league. That's a tough question.
And no is an acceptable answer.
Yeah.
Because I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
If you're going with the same sort of like civil rights thing, Jim Brown.
Did Wayne
all-time
Gretzky.
Great. No, that's why the Wayne Gretzky thing doesn't even make sense to me, why they did it. Just the great player?
Well,
I have so many thoughts on retired numbers that we can't get to now. And I don't have a problem with the NBA doing what they did yesterday. I think it's a nice tribute, but this whole trend of retiring mediocre numbers has just got to stop.
Can we revisit this later?
Maybe.
On Big Lamorada Mornings?
Or you can just listen to my podcast. No. Thank you, Sarah. We're all rebooted every morning, 7:30. The big story is through the Rush Hour reboot. Coming up next, we will talk basketball. We'll be joined by Howard Beck, senior writer from Sports Illustrated. Next, it's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata. Bickley and Murata Mornings.
That's the Friday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings, coming to you live from the Ok Chin Community Studios. Still no resolution on the Kevin Durant front. Will we get one soon? Here to talk about that in the NBA from Sports Illustrated, Howard Beck, our guest on the Arizona Sports Line. Howard, thanks for joining the show again. How are you this morning?
Doing all right, guys. How are you? Good morning.
Well, everybody's freaking out here in Phoenix because apparently there's reports, Howard, that Kevin Durant is in Phoenix for some reason, and people are trying to get to the bottom of it. We declared the Kevin Durant to Phoenix possibilities dead on this show yesterday.
Or close
to dead. What is your thought on Phoenix and the other teams maybe lobbying for his services?
Is this like Miracle Max in The Princess Bride saying the trade's only mostly dead?
Yeah, right. Yes. Yes. That's exactly what it is.
I mean, it's probably that, right? Like, if you had one of those things that you could, like, you know, squeeze and it blows out the air, maybe you could reinflate the trade talks with the Suns. How many weeks has it been now since the DeAndre Ayton, you know, offer sheet that got matched and obviously taking him off the board for the foreseeable future? I think it's really hard to construct a trade without him being part of it, whether that was going to be 2-team, 3-team, 8-team, whatever. And is there still some possibility? I guess, but, you know, the point of the exercise for any team acquiring Kevin Durant is to compete for a championship immediately. It's not some like 3-to-5-year window or 10-year. It's now. And if you give up too much in the process, you know, you're not actually moving, you know, the ball ahead. So, and Kevin Durant's going to be mindful of that too. He's with a team that on paper is a championship caliber team right now, and he still wants out. So he's not going to want to go somewhere that lessens his chances.
Yeah.
I don't know how they revive it. I really don't.
Yeah.
That's not to say that it's impossible, because people can get creative in this league, but I don't know how they can do it.
You know, you and I both know that there was a time when it was appalling enough when an NBA player would ask for a coach's head. Now you got a guy asking for a couple of heads on a platter. What do you think Kevin Durant was trying to accomplish by throwing both Sean Marks and Steve Nash under that bus? And what do you think the reaction has been to that?
I think it's pretty transparent. This isn't about trying to get the Nets to fire people. It's just still about trying to get traded. Like, he's not looking for reasons to stay. He's looking for reasons to go, and he's already said he wants to go. Like, this whole thing, and people need to use their heads. Like, and I mean us, the media and fans. Use your heads, people. If Kevin Durant's goal was to stay in Brooklyn, but with different leadership, that's a card he would have played back in April when they got eliminated in the first round by the Celtics, swept, or in May in the wake of that, or in June, or in July. Like, how are we getting to the middle of August and suddenly Kevin Durant wakes up one day and says, you know what, I might stay, but you got to fire the coach and the GM. Like, this doesn't happen this way. Like, use your heads, people. Like, there's nothing rational about this. And granted, there hasn't been anything rational about a lot of this. And, you know, people across the league, including in Brooklyn, are not clear on exactly what Kevin Durant's thought process is anyway. But if the goal were to stay but with different leadership, you would have said that right out of the gate. You wouldn't have issued a trade demand absent that. All or nothing. I just want out. Because the question would have been, wait, you want out? Oh, well, why? And is there something we can do to fix it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that would have been, so like June 30th, he would have said, oh, yeah, you can fix it. You can fire your coach and GM. Like, that's, why are we in August? Nobody, very rarely anyway, very, 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 very rarely do NBA teams fire coaches and GMs in August and September.
Yes.
And do searches. That it just doesn't happen. So what's the real maneuver here? It's just to throw more pressure on them, because they immediately leaked it too. The Nets aren't the ones who leaked the fact that Durant wants their top people fired. The Nets wouldn't do that. That came from Durant's camp.
Right.
I mean, some of this is very, very transparently obvious. And so why do you make the demand and then leak the demand? Because you're trying to put more pressure on them to make the trade that they haven't been able to make yet, because they haven't gotten the offer that they think is worthy yet.
Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated and co-host of the Crossover Podcast, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Now with the Boston possibilities, Philadelphia popping up as a possibility in the last couple days. On the Boston front, Howard, I'm real hesitant, even if Kevin Durant says, yeah, I'd go to Boston. I'm hesitant if I'm the Celtics to make that deal, because I think they got better this offseason and they were two games away from winning the championship. But on the Philadelphia front, how much sense does that make to you, if any at all?
I would just say, one, with all respect to you and everybody else who are discussing this, all of us in the media, nothing is new. Every team that has wanted to be in the Kevin Durant chase has probably made that known weeks and weeks ago. So things drip and drab out and little wrinkles come about, but it's not as though anything is new there. Everybody who wanted to be in this chase declared it long ago privately. Daryl Morey chases stars as a matter of habit. That's what he did in Houston. That's what he does in Philly. If there's a guy available and he's got a possible route to get him, especially if it's a top five player, Daryl's in. So, again, nothing shocking there. Yeah. The only thing that's strange about the Philly part of this is that, you know, Harden and Durant didn't exactly seem to click in their reunion in Brooklyn. And Harden, you know, then bails on them. Now, that said, stuff can be patched up really quickly in this league. Like, there aren't that many, you know, burnt bridges that can't be rebuilt if the money's right, if the deal is right, if there's a chance to win championships, all that stuff. So, and, you know, the Sixers have some assets they can work with. But, you know, if you're the Nets, you're immediately asking for, you know, you're probably not asking for Joel Embiid. That's probably not happening. But you're asking for Maxey.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a deal around him. Like, that's a tough one for the Sixers. But this is the case with every single trade possibility. And it's the same as you were mentioning with the Celtics. Yeah, the Celtics probably feel like they were, you know, a piece or two away from winning a championship, and now they got Brogdon, and, you know, they've got all the experience under their belts now, and they've got, you know, young guys who are still evolving. It is a tough trade-off because it's not Kevin Durant at 29. It's Kevin Durant at soon to be 34 next month, and with a tough injury history. So, you know, it's not a no-brainer. I know we like to say, well, it's Kevin Durant, so it's a no-brainer. Do whatever you have to do to get him. He's still a top three player in the league, and all that's true. But he is 34. He is 3 years removed from an Achilles surgery, and you just can't count on a long window with him, or that he's going to play anything close to a full season, because he hasn't.
All right. Lastly, on Kevin Durant, wherever he goes, do you think he becomes even more villainous? Do you think he cares? And do you think there's a bigger broad-based concern for the NBA in a star like Kevin Durant continuing to push this player empowerment narrative to the point where he wants to walk away from a contract he just signed?
So on the latter part of it, you know, we've already had this with, you know, Paul George, you know, forcing the trade out. Now, Oklahoma was willing to trade him. They wanted to tear down anyway once Westbrook was going to be gone. But Paul George did it a year after he signed his new contract with the Thunder, and Ben Simmons did it with, you know, 4 years left. Like, it used to be a year or two left, or usually a year, because that's when you're saying, well, trade me now or I'm leaving for nothing, and that actually benefits both parties. Now it's guys routinely asking with multiple years left on their deals. That is problematic. Adam Silver has said as much at, you know, in press conferences. I don't know how they fix it. I do think it's a point of discussion for them and the union. I don't know where that goes. In terms of Kevin Durant and his being a villain, like, he's been there, done that. Like, I mean, clearly he's sensitive to the point where he's had burner accounts, and even with his actual accounts has gone back at people on Twitter, and he says it's just fun. He just enjoys it. But I think he's overcompensating. Like, there is some sensitivity there, and that's fine. Like, I wouldn't like all the backlash either if I were him. So I think there's some sensitivity, but I also think he's, you know, now he's done this so many times. He's bailed on Oklahoma for the Warriors. He's bailed on the Warriors for the Nets, and now he's trying to burn this bridge. And I don't know that it's anything new for him at this point. You know, like, yeah, he's already, you know, endured, you know, all of the various versions of criticism and his image changing. But, you know, look, I think depending on how you're wired, if you're an all-time great as he is, a top 10 all-time player, you should have in the back of your mind, how am I ultimately going to be remembered?